It's time for what Podcast International called the greatest podcast in history. Open your ears, because it's time for Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.
All right, everybody, this is Brian Callen. You're listening to Man Thoughts, because I'm a man. Real quick, my upcoming tour dates, I will be in Fort Lauderdale at the Fort Lauderdale Improv, October 18th through the 20th. I can't wait. Then I'm going to be hunting with Joe Rogan in Montana for deer the 22nd to the 27th, like a man with a rucksack on my back and a knife in my teeth. Guys, very quickly, you can follow us, by the way, on Twitter at ManThoughtsBC or like us on Facebook. I don't even know what like us on Facebook means. This is what my producer, Mike Casantini, tells me to read. But I will say that we have a Man Thoughts survey. I need your I want to get you what your Man Thoughts are, because I'm going to write a book about it. And then we have several contests. And if you visit ManThoughts.com, I need somebody to help me design a T-shirt. I want a Man Thoughts T-shirt. And some of you guys have already submitted some pretty cool things via Twitter. So I'm kind of trying to come up with it, because the winner wins $500 American dollars and bragging rights. Whatever. It's just got to be a shirt I'm going to wear. So I'm looking for a Man Thoughts logo or T-shirt. So send it in. If I like it, awesome. My guest is Dr. Hernando Chavez, and you are you're basically an expert on what? Sexuality?
Sex and sex therapy.
Sex and sex therapy. Mm-hmm. See, I love having this stuff on, because guys obviously think about sex constantly. I think women think about sex all the time, but there are fundamental differences between male and female sexuality. And I want to talk to you about that. And I want to talk to you about the common myths. See, I think men get very hung up on sex in how it relates to women, because women are such a mystery to us sexually. Some women want to have their hair pulled. Other women want to be treated like a princess. Some women want a huge dick. Other women don't give a shit. I can't figure them out. I never have. 45 years on this planet, I still can't figure it out. So what do you think of the fundamental differences between men and women and how they relate to sex? Or is that question way too broad?
It's a broad question, but I think we all need to think about it, because as men, if we're heterosexual, we're going to be wanting to hook up with women, fall in love with women, have sex with women, and we do need to consider it. But I think we're also our own worst enemies. We make this into the biggest fucking issue we could think of. We start overanalyzing. We start wondering assumptions, all this bullshit. And what we need to do, I think, is start asking questions, being a little more confident with communication, and asking and saying, do you like your hair pulled? Do you like when I lick your clit? Do you prefer when I don't touch your ass? I mean, all these different things that we think about, but we're not asking. We're not finding out the answers to. So we just got these questions.
I've always caveman my way through the thing. Just kind of figure it out as it goes.
But you know, trial and error, it doesn't always work.
Absolutely.
Out.
But being open, and I think women like to communicate and feel safe, right? I
mean, oh, definitely.
That's the main thing.
For women, they just want to feel, you know, men and women, we're all anxiety. We're all filled with this anxious, you know, energy, and we're creatures that do want to feel comfortable, except we go about it different ways.
Right.
For men, we internalize it. Oftentimes, we don't express it. It just harbors and festers inside of us, whereas women use communication to really start feeling more comfortable when it comes to sex and feeling more intimate and close, and that opens the door for pleasure and intimacy and even orgasm.
So women have to feel safe and comfortable first, and then they can become the perverts we want them to be.
For a lot of women, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is that, you know, you've heard of that term, or heard of those numbers about guys think about sex every 7 seconds?
Yeah.
So they did research on it last year, and what they found was that men think about sex about 21 times per day.
Yeah.
And for women, it was 11 times.
That's
so interesting. We're almost the same. I mean,
yeah.
it's a little more that men think about it, but women are thinking about it a lot, too. I mean, 11 times per day is like once an hour.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to, by the way, living in a culture that we do, too, where it's always in your face.
Exactly.
But I think a lot of sexual hang-ups come from history, from the you know, before penicillin. My God, man, if you had sex with the wrong person, you were in deep shit. You got something called syphilis or gonorrhea with sores on the inside of your urethra, etc. I mean, so sex came with a real price, not to mention, I would imagine that the social taboos around sex came originally from the price you paid biologically, pregnancy, unwanted pregnancy, and disease.
Right.
Right. I mean, so But we live now in a time where technology has kind of allowed us to have sex without consequences to a large degree. I mean, healthcare and stuff, when you've got gonorrhea, chlamydia. I remember when I was in college, I was like, hey, doc, I got this drip. He was like, you take a pill. Don't worry about it, you know. And I was like, fuck, that's all it is, you know. So, you know, that's kind of where we're at now. I mean, there is AIDS and there were certain diseases that were, but they didn't so much manifest themselves in at least the straight community. Gay people have had to be more careful, gay men especially. But I guess we've evolved in a sense socially to still put a whole bunch of taboos on sex, right?
Exactly. And it's been something that's been present for hundreds of years, for centuries, but really in about the 1850s, 1870s, we had this era called the Victorian era.
Yep.
Where things got extremely conservative, and it derived from Europe, but it also impacted the rest of the world because, you know, England was a driving force at that time. Mm. So the attitudes about premarital sex were reinforced. You know, the honeymoon was also invented during this time period to sort of solidify this idea that we're virgins and then we're going to consummate and have this procreative, you know, experience once we're married. And there was really a lot of sex negative energy and discourse that was occurring at this time period that made people feel like virgins were the ultimate.
Well, that's right. I mean, in southern Italy, you would hang the sheets out because they'd be full of blood.
Right,
after
right.
The first night, that just proved that her hymen had been torn and she was a virgin. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of it. A lot of that has to do with me. I have a theory, and tell me what you think of this theory. I think cock size, like a lot of girls, if they date black guys, I've talked to them. They're like, I don't let white guys know that I date black guys because they won't date me. Okay, I've never been intimidated. I don't give a fuck about that stuff. But some guys are very much like that. And I think a lot of it has to do with a man's sense of territory. I think men kind of feel like if somebody's been farther up the road, I'm speaking metaphorically, he's got a 14-inch dick and I got a 6-inch dick. He's seen 6 more inches, 8 more inches of that pussy than I have. I'm not fucking going up there. That guy's got a flag where I can't reach. He's hit areas I haven't hit. And she knows it. He knows it. And I know it. Fuck it. I'm going to go find a smaller mountain to climb. And that's honestly my take on male sexuality. And I think a lot of racism for against black people, black men, and the violence toward black men in this country stemmed from this fear of. I mean, this is not an original or new thought, but I would imagine it's been floated out there that it was mainly because there was this myth, or maybe not a myth, that black men had bigger dicks and they were going to rape all our women and all that bullshit, you know. So
I definitely think that size, whether it's people that are black, because I do agree that there's racial aspects to sexuality that people sometimes either don't acknowledge or don't look at. Mm. But I think it's penis size in general. So if it's another person who's of the same, if you're both Italian.
Fuck yeah, black people have the same issues. There are a lot of black guys I know who have regular sized dicks.
Yeah.
And then they don't want their girl dating some fucking NBA player with a dick down to his knees. What are you talking about? Exactly.
It's true. And when you talk to women, the majority of women will say, I prefer an average to above average sized penis. They don't want these 13-inch anacondas.
Well, this porn star, Vanessa Blue, who's married to my buddy Michael Fattarossi, is a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I did a great interview with him, by the way, on
Porn Law on Twitter, right?
Yeah, it's great. And she said the greatest thing about a huge dick, because she used to be married to Lexington Steele, who's got like a 14. She goes, a big dick is kind of like an amusement park. You want to visit it every once in a while, but you would never want to live there. I was like, that's a fucking great. That's great.
It's a novelty. I agree. Yeah. I agree.
But tell me about, let's talk about, see, I always do this joke about women, and I've had sex, I've been around, you know, and women will make noise and they're very fit, very vocal if they're into it. I don't believe any of those noises personally. I think they're just doing it to make me feel like the king, and I appreciate it. But what do we know scientifically about the female orgasm?
Sure. Before we get into that, I want to bring up something. If she didn't make any noises, how would that impact you?
I'd have a fucking problem.
Yeah, so we kind of need that.
Yes, we do.
Not overacting, but we need some feedback.
Hell yeah! No, I appreciate it, man. I got no problem with it. I'm not saying I don't want, you know, listen, it's fantastic.
There's no bigger mindfuck than when they're making absolutely no sound and no breathing, and you're like, are you present?
Are you present? Although when something feels really good for me, I don't say a goddamn word. I'm just like, holy shit, this feels fucking good. But that's maybe the difference. But yeah, you're right. My joke is the only sound I will not stand for in bed from a woman is no laughing, please. Thank you.
Oh, but then, you know, when some women orgasm, they do laugh afterwards.
I've been there.
That is a trip.
Been there. I've had women laugh, literally, like they grab on you and start laughing. It's like, oh,
and it's funny because you immediately go into like insecurity mode, like, wait, are you laughing at me? Is it me? What did I do? Was it my performance?
Exactly.
Is it my dick?
I know. God, push harder. You're almost inside of me. What? But what do we know about the female orgasm?
You know, we don't know that much. Here's what's unfortunate about science and studying sex is that we studied male sexuality for so long, and women were sort of left out in the dark.
Yeah.
You know, they discovered the G-spot back in the early 50s, a doctor named Ernest Graffenberg, and no one took him seriously, and no one really cared because it was a female, you know, about female sexual pleasure. And so for about 35 years, no one touched it. No one built upon his research. He even left his research because he wasn't getting published.
He was thought to be a pervert doctor, I'm sure.
Right. And so who picked up? It was John Perry, Dr. John Perry, and Dr. Beverly Whipple who picked up on his research in the late 70s. And they wrote a book in 83 that kind of rediscovered the G-spot and put it back on the map. So, you know, there was a long lag of time where they just were not focusing on female sexuality. And it was the dawn of, I think, female sex researchers that really opened the door to allowing, you know, sex research for women to occur.
Wow. Is that right?
Yeah. So we've only had about, you know, 20, 30 years of us studying different, you know, sexual expression, pleasure, erogenous zones, G-spots.
So Masters and Johnson did some work. They're doing a TV show about that right now.
Yeah.
They use some nurses and things.
Masters and Johnson's, they're pretty revolutionary. And one reason they were was because they had a male medical doctor. So that was William Masters. And they had a female social worker. So she was more of like the empathic therapeutic sort of. So they combined these two perspectives. It was like male, female.
Didn't they use themselves as experiments as well? Or I don't know.
The thing that was interesting about them is that they used sex surrogates. They used prostitutes or sex workers. They really kind of pushed the envelope into what they were doing. They used direct observation, which is something that was unheard of. I mean, people watching, you know, people having sex and observing like the vulva and the penile, you know, vaginal interaction and intercourse going in and out. And so they would do a lot of direct observation, almost like Kinsey did. And he got a lot of shit for it back in the day. And so did Masters and Johnson.
Yeah.
But one of their greatest achievements was they came up with the 4-stage sexual response cycle. So excitement, plateau, orgasm. And then we have our refractory period for men, but the resolution phase for women. And then they also came up with a number of sex therapy techniques, like how to work with early/premature ejaculation and a couple other. So they had really
that took me a long time, man.
Hey, it's a lot of training that we all have to do.
No kidding. Control your breathing. Dead dog. I think about fucking whatever I could. Now at my age, it's like, no problem. It took a long time.
And you know, that's the biggest one for men. I write for this website called
Ask
Men.
Dude, you would breathe on me if you were a girl the wrong way in college, right? And I'd fucking lose it. For real. I'd go down on a girl and fucking lose it. I'd be like, sorry.
It's true.
You know, come on. It took a long time. But I will say that it's also very mental. I remember men are emotional. You know, I was in love with a girl, man. I was in love with this girl, and we were going through a breakup. And I don't want to mention even what she did because it'll give it away, but she was one of the hottest girls on the planet at the time. And she was just on calendars, and I mean, she was phenomenal. And we were in my bed, and she wanted a bang. I mean, she was, and I couldn't get it up because I was thinking about my old girlfriend. That's how I couldn't get it up. This girl is so ridiculously hot. Literally, you give a pinky, and I'm looking at this freak. I'm like, you're perfection. I can't get it up because I'm thinking about my freaking my girlfriend who's a 6 or whatever, and you're like this 10 that everybody on the planet jerks off to. I can't get it up because I'm in love with this girl who's not that into me. You know, there it is.
Happens to us all.
Yeah.
One of the things that men don't do is we don't process some of our quote unquote traumas, like a breakup or, you know, being in love and how do we get past that and beyond that. What we do is sometimes jump into the sack with the next girl and we try to fuck it out.
That's
and
right.
We try to fuck it out. It's not working down the road.
That's interesting because that's what Jack Nicholson said. The best way to get over somebody is get under somebody else or get over somebody, get over somebody else, you know. I mean, what do you have to say about that? I mean, for guys who are, because I think we repeat the same, not only do we date the same people over and over again, we repeat the same mistakes. And there's never any real talk for guys about just exactly how emotional sex is. Even with me, I'm older. You talk to me about how emotional you are about some girl, I'm like, hey, bro, suck it up and move on. That's just how we are. But in reality, we're not like that. In reality, you know, you can get devastated by a girl and it can put a crimp in your sexual step for the next 10 years.
You know what's interesting about what you're saying is that if it's guys in public, let's say you got a group of guys and it's happy hour, everyone will dog each other on the emotionality, the intimacy aspects of sex. But when it's either private, like one-on-one with a guy and he's struggling, like a guy will step up and be like open the door to that communication, that emotionality.
Sure.
Or when we have female friends, I'm such a big fan and proponent of guys having a couple girls that they're just friends with that they can use to sort of communicate, be emotional with, bounce off ideas. I mean, we have to practice as men. I mean,
we've
been extra tough for way too long, and I think we need to learn to harness some of this emotionality because it works for us in relationships.
Though I was going to say the problem with being extra tough is it's not useful. It's actually not useful if you want to make a relationship work.
Exactly.
I mean, it just isn't. Women don't communicate that way. They shut down. You know, I've had to learn that, you know, in spades. You go to your default button, which is trying to be tough and power through and fuck through or whatever, but it actually doesn't work.
It actually works against us, and I think men are their own worst enemies in relationships. Mm-hmm. I know we can point the fingers and blame it on women, and we can say it's because they're crazy or they're this or they're that, but really when we look at the way we interact, I mean, I think we add a lot of gasoline to the fire, and with our shutdowns or our lack of communication or our uncomfort with being sensitive or emotional or intimate, it really does, I think, throw a wrench in the engine of a relationship. We need more skills training because we don't get that. I mean, where do we learn how to be in a relationship?
I was going
to
say, there's no manual.
There's no manual.
But, you know, and the other thing is that they did a survey on people who've been married for a long time. And you know what all of them said? It's not communication or anything. They all said, well, we've just been together so long because there's a deep sexual connection. And I think that, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, if I'm with a girl, the reason I'm dealing with all her bullshit is because I want to fuck her at the end of the day. I mean, you know, there's got to be that sexual. That's why it's called dating or marriage. That's why you move in with somebody of the opposite sex who has a totally different mind than you and everything else. It's because you want to get inside them, mm-hmm. not to be, you know, let's get down to brass tacks. I want to fuck her, you know, and sometimes you want to make love. There are two different things. Joe Rogan always says, you know, I don't care. You know, sometimes you make love, but sometimes it's time to fuck, which means you're on your stomach or you're on your knees. It's hard to make love from behind. But either way, I mean, we're animals, but that connection, that animal connection, which is also an emotional connection, you can't sustain the animal connection. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. You can't sustain the animal connection without tending to the emotional connection.
You know, if we're going to be in a relationship for the long haul, for long term, we need to harness, and I think solidify our skills in a lot of different areas. We have to have the entire piece of the pie, or the entire pie with all the different pieces. You know, what am I trying to say here? Let's edit that.
Well, no, I know what you're saying. You've got to take a look at the whole organism of the relationship. You can't just attend to one thing at a time. You've got to look at it as a holistic.
Exactly.
Entity.
And I think what a lot of men do also too is they'll focus on their strengths and they'll turn a shoulder to the things that they're not so good at, whether it's emotionality or intimacy or communication or talking, spending time, whatever it may be. And they'll focus on, let's say, I fuck really well, or I'm a really good athlete, or I've got a great body, so I'm going to keep going to the gym, or whatever it may be that they perceive as being a strong point in their relationship.
Yep.
And I think the flaw that a lot of men and women too as well have is that we're not willing to look at what we're not good at or what we need help with or what we need to work on and actually focus on that and put our energy towards improving those areas, because we can be great in some things in a relationship, awful in other areas.
I also think we play characters. I see a lot of relationships with guys playing. The girl doesn't even know who the fuck he is, and the guy doesn't know who she is. She's playing this ultra feminine creature, and he's playing this ultra masculine creature. He's a peacock, and she's a, you know, whatever. She's like a Barbie doll. And you see this all the time, and they never actually, and she's hiding all the time behind her makeup and her high heels and her short skirts and her hair extensions. She never lets him see what she really looks like. He's always hiding behind the armor that he puts on at the gym. And I see that a lot. I see a lot of sort of like both couples, both sexes subscribe to the male and female archetypes. Right?
Right. And there is a movement, I think, to try to challenge that and get away from that. But I think a lot of people still out of comfort or expectation or social
or maybe
constructs.
Even genetics, man. I don't know. You know?
That's a combination, too.
Yeah.
But I think what a lot of people don't do is they're not authentic with what they really want. Like when we talk about monogamy versus non-monogamy, most people are non-monogamous. If you really got down to it and you cut to the core. Even women.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
In other words, because you're always running into very sexy or intelligent or intriguing people of the opposite sex. You know, I'm speaking just for, by the way, if you're gay, I'm just speaking just heterosexually here because that's my experience. But I mean, you know, oh, I said it'd be easier to be gay anyway. I got friends who are gay. Just take a walk in the park. You know what I mean?
More straightforward.
Fucking straightforward. Two guys, they just glance at each other. But I mean, you know, there's no doubt that. That I think that certainly whenever I meet a man who acts like monogamy is not close to impossible, I'm always like, I don't fucking believe you, bro. Just be honest. And but we live in a culture, you know, in TV, if you even act like you're that, like monogamy's hard, they hate you.
Right.
I can't even admit it's difficult. When I talk about being married and I talk about, you know, when I'm on stage in anywhere and I talk about how monogamy can sometimes feel like you're crossing the desert with salt in your mouth. It, you know, people laugh, but my joke is I go, I'm not saying it's like crossing a desert with salt in your mouth, but that's exactly what I'm fucking saying, you know, and people laugh, but it gets real tight in the room when I start talking about monogamy. It gets tight. It gets like, I always make this joke where I go to birthday parties with my kids and my, you know, my wife, and I'm always like, and I'm the guy, I'm not the dad with the sun hat and the fanny pack. I'm the rangy carnivore in the corner eyeing up the other moms inappropriately. And I'm like, you know, why don't we put the kids down for a nap and throw our keys in a fucking bowl? This would be a lot more fun than sitting here and having to watch a puppeteer in the corner. You know what I mean? And I think most men feel that way, but nobody wants to talk. Maybe women do too.
Well, I think women, well, everyone's afraid and everyone's in denial and people are afraid that it's going to, you know, shake up the system so much that it's going to take away the things that they love. Like for a lot of women, if they did have desires of being with another woman or another man and they're in a relationship or married, they're afraid if they're going to lose their commitment. They're afraid that they might lose the
security. It is the danger zone. It is.
It's dangerous. Yeah.
You know, if you have the mother of your child, I don't know if you want her taking it from some other guy. You don't know. I think that there's got to be some genetic portion to that. There's got to be some kind of a breeding instinct somewhere there where we shun, you know, men certainly, they even say our penises are I hate saying the word penis, our cocks are designed so that they actually will pull the other sperm out and get ours in. That's what Discovery Channel had. That's why you get the head of it. I don't know what the fuck, but I mean, there is this idea of I want to be the one to breed right with you. I want to be the one to mark you. I want to be the one. You're my property. You know,
and you know the way the female's built is that if you look at like cameras inside of the vagina, you'll see that during orgasm, you'll see the vaginal canal sort of pools and pockets towards the back, right next to the cervix or the opening. It's called the os. And what you'll see during orgasm for a female is when there's like a pool of semen at the bottom there, that actually the cervix will kind of make this contraction where it kind of goes and dips
it
back into it.
Really?
So it's almost like sucking in the semen. So they're not.
I didn't know that.
They don't really care whose semen it is. It's about procreating. It's about the biological desire.
So if you make a girl come, you're most likely you're the one that she's going to have.
Science has shown the orgasmic contractions actually help facilitate pregnancy or. Yeah,
that's so interesting.
I love looking inside the vagina. Camera, no camera,
dude. Me too. I've never done it with a camera, but listen, sign me the fuck up. Is there a website we can go to? What's your website?
My website's www.drhernandochavez.com. So it's Dr. Hernando Chavez.
Well, what is your website? What do we get when we go to your website?
You just go to. It's mostly therapy. I don't put too much other stuff on there.
The main thing you help people with? Fears.
You know, I specialize in my private practice with erotic communities. So
you do?
Poly, kink, swinger, BDSM, non-monogamy.
Dude, hang out, motherfucker.
I love like the real small like populations of just interesting, fetishy, paraphilic, sort of fun. You know, to me, that's really interesting. Not too many people specialize in that. But then I also work at a clinic called the Center for Healthy Sex, where I do straightforward sex therapy, which is premature ejaculation, anorgasmia, you know, not having orgasms.
So for some of the younger guys, what do you do about premature ejaculation?
You know, here's the thing about premature ejaculation.
My boy Daniel's in the back. He's a young guy going, yeah, what do I do about that shit?
He just pulled out a pen and paper, taking some notes.
Look at you. He's got calluses all over his hands, you fucking freak.
Well, you brought it up earlier, which is the anxiety that we have. And so a lot of men need to get past the anxiety because this is the number one problem for men, is premature ejaculation. Two, we have to, I think, retrain ourselves masturbatory-wise and also sexually to be present in the moment. We have to be mindful. A lot of us are thinking about, you know, baseball stats, who's got, you know, who's Cabrera winning the Triple Crown. We're thinking about all these different teams. You know, I know people who will, like, go through the American League and the National League while they're having sex in order to try to last longer.
Yeah.
And it's the exact opposite. We have to actually...
Personally, I like to just look in the mirror and run my fingers through my hair. I come immediately.
And then there's some like that.
Yeah, right. American Psycho. No, but yeah, okay. So you kind of teach them to key into, first of all, being present.
To be present, to be mindful of their body. And you do that through masturbation and also partnered sexual exercises. But one thing, too, is for masturbation, a lot of us were taught to do it quick. A lot of us were, you know, jumped in the shower. We turned.
Yeah, man.
We're hiding from our family. I mean, you shared a room or a bathroom with people, brothers and sisters. You got to, you know, jack off as quick as possible. And so.
Does everybody masturbate pretty much? Somebody said it's just like pick in your nose. You never really talk about it. Everybody fucking does it, right?
You know, they say about 95% of guys do.
And, yeah, I don't know anybody who doesn't. I mean, come on.
Yeah, show me the 5%.
I can do it with both hands, for Christ's sake. And I'm very right-handed. I have to do it with both hands. You hear that, ladies? No, yeah. No girls listen to man thoughts.
But it helps when you're jacking off to make them real long, 15, 20 minute long sessions, and do peaking exercises where you get really close to ejaculating an orgasm and then you stop and you let yourself, you know, kind of relax a bit for about 30 to 45 seconds and then start masturbating again. So you're doing this like...
I love therapists. You're speaking in such a very sweet voice and you're talking about jerking off and you just bring it up and then you stop and you bring it up. It's fucking hilarious. You're such a healer.
It's so great to talk
about
this.
By the way, you could only say this shit if you were a doctor. Like, you couldn't really say to a guy, like, if I walked to my buddy and go, really helps if you draw out your masturbation. If you just go, you peek, then pull back a little bit, peek. My friend would be like, I got to get the fuck out of here right now.
He's a creepy motherfucker. Exactly. It doesn't work at happy hour.
Listen, we're all creeps. I always say, like, you know, I know a girl, I like a girl if she puts the creep in me. Mm-hmm. You know, and the older I get, the creepier I get. It's funny because I feel the same, but they just get younger and younger.
Well, the older we get, the more authentic we get. And we're like, you know,
that's
what?
Why I actually like older women. That's why I like, you know, I think I'm more attracted to women in their 30s and 40s. I really am. I just, because they've forgotten, because they don't have the sexual hangups. You know, they're women.
Yeah,
know?
That's so true. I mean, they've gotten past a lot of their body image issues. They've gotten past a lot of the hangups that have just held them back for years. And they also are more likely to orgasm because they're so much more comfortable.
Absolutely, man. They're more likely to use you, you know.
Right. We all had that story. Remember that first older woman that we hooked up with? We're like, wow, that was much different than like the scared, you know, shitless
yes.
little 18-year-old that I hooked up with, you know, in college.
Yes. Yeah, I remember it very well.
Me too.
I was in Russia, believe it or not. But so premature ejaculation is a big one. What are the other things?
ED, erectile dysfunction or erectile concerns.
Oh, wow.
That's a big one, too. And that's usually associated, about 90% of the cases are psychologically oriented.
Happened to me, like I said. It was all psychological.
Yeah, it's all in our heads.
Yeah.
Of course, down the road, as we get older, you know, there's going to be higher rates of, let's say, physiological ED. But with, you know, if we do things early on, not smoke, do Kegel exercises, you know, masturbate, you know, or at least use our penis often, I think that we can sort of fight some of those erectile dysfunction sort of
fucking work out, man.
Work out.
If you nutrition. Deadlift and stuff and do like heavy lifting, it spikes your testosterone.
Exactly.
It's the only reason I fucking do it.
And then, you know, when we get older, if we need some testosterone replacement, or if we do need to kind of do something, maybe even a pill or something, you know, down the road when we're 50, 60, 70, that's perfectly understandable.
I'll be right in line.
Exactly.
I got no problem with that, man.
But we can't worry about it. You know, too many men are so focused and fixated on it that we're actually mind fucking ourselves out of actually being sexually healthy.
What do you do with somebody who can't be faithful? What do you do if somebody says, hey, I love my wife or I love my girlfriend, but I just have I know a couple people who just have a compulsion. It's a compulsion. And I guess they have to see, you have to see a professional for something like that. What do you do about something like that? I mean,
for me, you know, it's not so much about trying to force them or change them into being monogamous, because if that's not who they naturally are, I think I'm barking up the wrong tree.
Yeah.
I'm trying to play God here with people's lives. I'm more about being authentic. And if you are non-monogamous and that's truly who you are, it's fucked up if you're cheating on your partner and being dishonest with them, because, you know, to me, honesty is the cornerstone of a relationship. So what are you doing in it?
Why? It's also the cornerstone of being of your life.
Yeah.
Life. We're all lying to an extent to ourselves, to somebody else, but
I'm lying to you today. I'm not a doctor.
He just showed up. Daniel, who the fuck did you book? No, but you're right. I mean, we all to some extent are, you know, I just read a book by Stephen Pressfield called Turning Pro. And it's really about the notion, there are a lot of people who have their PhDs in comparative literature when they should be writing a book. And they're lying to themselves. It's a form of high-tech procrastination, you know.
Right.
So in a way, I mean, the idea, I guess, in your life is to get as honest as you possibly. It's always been my policy. My friends know exactly who I am. I think a lot of my listeners know exactly who I am. I don't try to, you know, it's hard for me to, you know, it's just way more liberating to not take yourself too seriously and to be as honest as you possibly can.
It is. I mean, why create a spider web of lies where you have to make more lies, and all of a sudden you got the anxiety and all the weight and pressure on your shoulders of trying to keep up those lies and that bullshit facade? It's so liberating to just be honest and be who you are. And I'm going through the same thing right now too. I just met a girl, we started dating the last few weeks, and I'm telling her everything. You want to know who I am? This is who I am. If you can love it, accept it, great. If you can't, maybe we're not good for each other.
This is what I said to my wife once. She found a text message. I don't want to get too into it, but it was nothing. I explained it. But she thought something was going on, and it wasn't. But I explained what the situation was. We cleared it all up. And she said, I don't know if I can ever trust you. And I said, let me explain something to you. I said, I don't want you to ever fully trust me. I don't like that idea because it takes away all the danger in a relationship. The fact of the matter is, I don't want to completely trust anybody I'm having sex with because, in a way, trust is very important. You also need a little uncertainty, adventure, and danger. You also have to feel a little bit like you're competing with the rest of the world. And I think when you completely trust somebody, you're going to get fat as a fucking rock and stop fucking. I think there is something to be said about living a little bit in the danger zone. The truth is, you are competing with the world. The truth is that if you're married or you're with somebody, you are going to find other people very tempting sometimes. You might even slip and jump in. But the bottom line is, if you start saying, I demand full 100% trust no matter what, I can understand the need for that. I also think there's a dark side to it. I also think that if you know, people had a little more danger and uncertainty, they'd start working out and take care of themselves. I can see couples all the time that just have fucking given up. And I promise you they're not fucking. And if they are, it's in the dark, you know. And I think that we all need to feel a little bit. I'm just saying, this is just my philosophy, but you as a doctor would have a different point of view maybe. But I think we all need a little adventure in our fucking lives. I really think if you're having problems with your marriage or something, bring somebody else in. Try it out, man. Try swinging once. If it makes you jealous as shit, go home and fuck each other. I don't know. Do something.
You know what's interesting about swinging and open relationships is that most couples, most people who engage in that will say afterwards that it charged their sexual life and they actually fucked even more intensely and passionately. Like for some...
I've done it. I mean, not with my wife, but with old girlfriends. I mean, mm-hmm. I, as long as you enter that equation, as long as you go into it as a team.
Right.
It's an adventure you're both having. It's not something you're just doing to get off. You're doing it together.
Well, and that's a big part of the non-monogamy movement that's occurring right now, which is people are starting to open up their relationships and they're starting to invite other partners into it. And because they're feeling so confident and solidified and secure within their relationship, that's when it can work. You don't use open relationships or a hookup or threesome swinging if you guys are on the rocks or if things are fucked up or you guys are fighting or there's resentment. You don't bring it in to fix things. You bring it in to accentuate and to enhance.
Absolutely.
You know, they've done some research on some studies recently that back in the 80s and 90s, they found that there's about, 15%, 20% of people in open relationships. Married couples have had at least one experience of open relationships. And now those numbers are up in like the 25% range.
Oh,
so
shit.
A quarter of people
are
married.
The Catholic Church must be rolling in its grave.
Oh, they're loving it.
Ooh. But like you said, it's honest, isn't it? It's part of the human experience, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you and I were talking. I interviewed Alana Evans, who's done porn for 15 mm-hmm. years. Not my lifestyle, but the thing about Alana is that she's been around in the business so long because she's had to partially because she's so remarkably normal. She's just hypersexual, but she's got a really good work ethic. She's a great gal. She's got a kid. I mean, I understand the idea. She's not a good example. You can say all these things if you want. But the bottom line is what's remarkable about someone like Alana is that she may be an exception, but Alana has always been really honest with who she is, what she does. And as a result, it's really hard to not, it's very liberating, I'm sure, for her. And as a result, she is remarkably normal. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't, because she fucks on film doesn't actually mean she's crazy, which is what I would always say, right? I'd be like, well, at the end of the day, you're fucking nuts. Not so with Alana Evans, because in my philosophy on that is because she's just really honest with who she is and what she does.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk to, let's say, an average girl in a club and you talk to a porn star, it's night and day when it comes to sexual comfort, talking about, getting tested.
Well, look at Nina Hartley. You know Nina Hartley, and I met her once, and she's featured in Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Body, a book I recommend highly to everybody. She's a real sex expert, right? I mean, you've had conversations with her?
Oh, yeah. She's spoken in my class. She is an excellent, excellent sex educator. She knows the ins and outs of both, not only just the industry, but I think the field of sex education as well.
Wow, because she was a registered nurse at one point.
Oh, yeah.
And what does she have to say about, what is her advice usually?
You know, a lot of us are on board. We follow what we call the sex positive sexuality movement, which is we believe in positive sex education that should be occurring for people, because we're not educated, and or there's negative messages being sent with sex education, that's what's fucking us up.
When does that start?
Oh, in this country, it's much different than other countries. But we start, you know, from infancy, where we're getting these messages about sex and how bad it is, and don't touch your pee-pee.
Yeah.
Nudity's bad.
Yeah.
Put your clothes on. Don't keep your diapers off. You know, all these things that we start
shaming. Creates shame.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You go into Sweden, you go into the Amsterdam/the Netherlands, go into Germany. Those are the three most open-minded societies that have sex education from like 3, 4, 5 years old on.
Yeah, they're not all fucking in the street. In fact, they have a very low birth rate. They actually don't have a lot of kids.
What's amazing is that the more age-appropriate education you get over the course of time in your life, what we find is that you have lower rates of abortion, lower rates of STIs, and lower rates of teen pregnancy.
Really?
Yeah, across the board. We are always at the top of first
world countries.
Because
there isn't such a forbidden sort of taboo on it, you think? Or
you know, they've just been exposed to it, and exposure produces anxiety. So, like, we have the higher rates of binge drinking in this country as well, too, because we are, you can't drink, and all of a sudden you hit 18, you go to college, what are you doing?
Dude.
You're beer bonging.
Listen, man,
I
travel this country. I'm amazed at what a nation of alcoholics we are. I'm serious.
It's because for the first 18 years of our life, it's been no, and all of a sudden we get out on our own and we just take, you know, we don't know how to handle it. There's no education we have with alcohol here.
Yeah.
Whereas in France, kids are drinking wine at the table.
No, 13 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't have I've spent a lot of time in France, one of my favorite places for that reason. Italy is the same way.
I remember being in Germany and they were selling orange juice. I had the TV on in my hotel room and they were selling orange juice and it was two beautiful blonde topless women. And I thought, that would never fly in America, but I'm sure glad that I'm watching it here because it looked great and it made me want orange juice.
Well, so if you think about it, men can have their shirts off on TV, women can't.
Right.
Which is very interesting. We've sexualized the breast, you know, where I guess somehow you're not allowed to see a woman run down the beach with her shirt off, exposing nipple. And when, what's her name? Janet Jackson showed her tit on live TV like that. It was a huge thing against the moral majority. What if Justin Timberlake had showed his tit? Who says that the breast is fucking sexualized? Mm-hmm. You guys do. You guys made it that way. So, you know, I always think the biggest joke is that prostitution is illegal in this country. So two adults can't fucking make a transaction. I can't fucking pay an adult to have sex with me if I want to, based on my terms and her terms. I guess the government, the state's got to come in and tell me that that's wrong. Who are you guys telling me? That's your philosophy. That's your outdated pre-antibiotic post-syphilis philosophy. Let me do what I fucking want to do. Let me choose my own way of doing things. I don't need you moralizing for me.
You know, George Carlin had one of the best, the great comedian George Carlin had a great line about prostitution and sex work. He said, how can we criminalize and arrest somebody for something that's perfectly legal to give away for free?
Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean,
that's exactly right.
So the exchange of money makes it illegal, but the fact that
if I take a girl out to dinner and spend a whole lot of money on dinner, and make no mistake, I have wooed women with $200 to $300 dinners because I want to get in their pants. That to me is paying. That's a seduction, and I'm fucking lying the whole time about all the celebrities I pretend to know. That's what works in LA.
We're painting the most beautiful.
Wait a minute,
of ourselves.
Did I say that out loud? Damn it! I gotta stay cool on this man thoughts thing. I'm blowing my whole reputation. I'm such a, I can never run for office. I'm such a jackass. At least I don't do a lot of drugs, but I am a degenerate and, you know, proud of it. We got to wrap this up, but I'm glad you joined us. Will you come back, Dr. Hernando?
Anytime. This is a lot of fun. I love your work. Big fan.
Thanks, brother. I like your work. Gee whiz. I wish I could do your work. I'd rather look into vaginas sometimes and sit on a set all day.
It's pretty phenomenal.
I guess so, man. I guess so. Good luck with your new relationship.
You got it.
Your Dr. Sex. I'm sure she's going to be asking you a lot of questions.
5 days in. We'll see how it goes.
Is that right?
Yeah, I met
her
Wednesday.
Have you ever been married?
No, never have.
No.
Haven't had a girlfriend or a partner since the 90s, since Bill Clinton was in office.
What are you talking? Why? You're a handsome guy.
Oh, I just, relationships. You know, I'm busy. I like to kind of keep some freedom.
you like to swing, brother. That's what I'm talking. That's why he's a doctor, sex doctor. What am I asking him for? Relationships. He's the expert. Plus, you're in all those communities.
Yeah.
Can I come over sometime?
Why would you go swinging with like a ball and chain attached to your ankle?
Woo!
You're going
to
sink.
I like it. The truth comes out in the last minute. You guys have been listening to Man Thoughts. Just a reminder, I'll be at the Fort Lauderdale Improv October 18th through the 20th. So come on by and help me design a t-shirt, Man Thoughts t-shirt. I need it. And I'll pay you $500. Maybe I'll pay more. Maybe I'll make it $1,000. 500 seems kind of measly nowadays. 1,000. A grand. I just changed it. I'll give you $1,000 if I choose your t-shirt. That sounds better. I really will, too. All right, man. Dr. Hernando Chavez, where can people take your class?
I teach at Orange Coast College in Costa Mesa.
All right. Orange Coast College. What's the name of the class?
It's human sexuality. So I teach an intro class and then a second version, which is an advanced class.
All your students, all your young female students get a little crush on you, I bet.
Once in a while.
You're so modest.
Got to keep your boundaries.
Got to keep
my job.
That's why I could never teach that class. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.